Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Excellence Cartel. Today, we have an amazing guest, Ben Azadi, the author of Keto Flex. As you guys know, I post about this in my story. As you guys know, I've done keto. I'm recently coming back into a carb cycle. There's been talk about keto, using it, weight loss resistance, and all the mysticism involving it to help people suddenly like lose weight and do all these things. But Ben's book was just groundbreaking to me in the way it laid everything out in terms of flow and put together a lot of pieces that Dr. Pompa's book didn't really clarify out really well, because I think at the time it was written. And then the best thing, Ben, you wrote in your book was talking about the difference between like the keto that most people are familiar with and the keto that you need to actually be successful. So we're going to take a deep dive into that today. But as tradition, we're going to get into our last 7 days. We don't have Jeff Sue with us. So Jason, how was your last 7 days, my friend?
Headed off to Charleston last Wednesday. I had what turned out only to be one competitor in Junior USAs.
Were you supposed to have more?
Yeah, I was. And, you know, I had to move some people around. Things weren't where we kind of wanted them. Other people were going different directions and shows. So, but I mean, that was fine. She won the overall in women's physique and went pro. She was dominating, and it was a hands down victory. So we're going to take a little off season, but honestly, she's pretty damn close, ready for the pros, to be honest with you. So that was cool. And then just toured the city and got some good eats, and I got home Sunday. Sunday, the guys finally got the pool done, so I can control the heater, the hot tub, the whole damn thing, lights, the waterfalls, all by my phone, which is pretty badass and cost me more money than I should have paid. But I really don't give a fuck, because it's really cool and I love it. So
YOLO, man, YOLO.
I was out. Exactly. I was out in the hot tub last night, had the music cranked, and I got rocks with speakers up in the flower beds and had all the lights on. I'm sure my neighbors love me. But I really don't care. It's my property, so I'll do as I please. That's been about it. You know, business is good. My class started last night, ended up with about 50 in it. So that was a really good turnout for Introduction to Functional Nutrition. If anyone's listening and they want in, I'll let you in. You only missed one module. I give you the recording and I can get you paid up and we can get rolling next Monday. Other than that, man, can't complain, dude. Things are great in life, and I'm blessed. So
badass, man. Well, things be good over here. My back is doing really good. The decompression that I've been doing on S1 and L5 has really helped. A lot of the manipulation, P-Wave, which is the stuff that like blows out inflammation. It's like the sonic vibrational acoustic thing. It doesn't feel good, but it really helps break out like old inflammation. I've been going through that. And then back to training legs 2 days a week. And as you've seen, my physique starting to come back to life now that I can train again and things like that. So I compete 2 weeks from this Saturday for my first warm-up show, and that's on to Masters Nationals, and see what we do. And then other good thing is my book comes out in October.
Yes.
So it'll be an October deadline. It'll be out in October, Brittle to Unbreakable. So I'm real excited to get all that done. It's been a hell of a process. And then I finalized everything with Steven, fly out to California and record with Steven Pressfield, since he helped me write my book and mentored me through that process. And it's going to be super
part
cool.
Of Boom.
So I'm going to hold it. We're going to use it for what we're doing with Unbreakable Industries on my end of stuff, you know, since I kind of formed that out. And then I'm going to be able to give it to Boom if they want it. So Ben, Jason and I are on an upcoming show called Boom America. I'm going on there for the book. Jason's on there with Advanced Vitality and New Ethics Formulation. So it's Kevin Harrington from the first season, the first couple of seasons of Shark Tank. Yeah. And they're just trying to stand stuff up. So it's been a pretty cool journey that we've been on that end, because they've really opened our eyes to stuff. Like, I see how it is to what it really takes to do a Amazon bestseller to a New York Times bestseller book. It takes a lot of work. And speaking of that, before we get into your book, how's your last 7 days been? I want to dive into all this shit and just start tearing it apart.
Yeah, I love the update. Y'all are doing some cool things. Steven Pressfield is amazing. I love that guy. His he's such a gifted writer, Turning Pro. I love that book. I've read that book multiple times. It's like, I always think about the resistance. Whenever I'm procrastinating, I think of like this like devilish resistant sort of person, like not forcing me but like guiding me to do the things that I shouldn't be doing. But it kind of like makes me aware of, okay, this is the resistance, this is something that I need to break through and turn pro and stop being an amateur. So that's pretty cool that you're working with him. He's fantastic. last 7 days have been great. Let's see, I had a great coaching call on the weekend with my Keto Camp Academy students. We had about 70 people on a Zoom call.
And what is Keto Camp?
So Keto Camp, well, Keto Camp's my company. And okay. We have an online program called the Keto Camp Academy, where we have, I built out what I teach in my book, but more in a comprehensive system, my four pillar system, where we teach you how to be metabolic flexibility, which is the goal. So we have health coaches on board and we do group coaching calls, one-on-one coaching, and then we have all the modules built out in a step-by-step system. So twice a month, we do a 2 to 3 hour Zoom group coaching call that I lead with my coaches. And this Saturday, we had a packed house. We had about 70 students on there, did a lot of Q&A, answered a lot of questions. It was about 3 hours long. And then Sunday, I played some basketball, which I do every Sunday, fasted basketball for 2.5 hours and went undefeated. Proud about that.
Good for you, man.
Thank you, bro. I love basketball. And I'm tall, 6'2". I got long arms. I play pretty well.
I'm 5'2", but I could dunk on you, I'm sure.
Okay, let's go. Let's do it. You'll be pretty good at boxing me out. And
fall down. You'll trip over my ass. This is what will happen.
But I got the length. Mm-hmm. And I've been reading a book, actually listening to a book called 10X is Easier Than 2X. It's a new book by Benjamin Hardy and Dan Sullivan. It's not the 10X sort of philosophy that Grant Cardone talks about. It's a different book, although there's some similar principles. It's a really good book. Yesterday, I had a long drive to my biological dentist, so I listened to it in the car. And, you know, it just got me inspired because I know a lot of my activities are what he refers to as 2X, meaning there's really nothing special about growing times two. But when you could manifest a 10X growth, I'm looking at all the activities I do on a day-to-day basis, and I'm like, that's a 2X activity. That's a 2X activity. And I need to just delegate all that and focus on 10X. So it's been a lot of light bulb moments for me.
What's the book called, Ben?
10X is Easier Than 2X by Dan Sullivan and Dr. Benjamin Hardy.
Got it.
You know, it's interesting. I have to ask you this question before I get in this, because it's going to be a perfect segue. Perhaps. I've been bugging Jason that him and I needed to write a nutritional book. Do you think that writing that book helped you be able to do what you're doing with keto? Like, did that, the book Keto Flex, did that give you the blueprint to be able to run the modules for Keto Camp Academy? And would you say that a book would be helpful for a coach to write to be able to blueprint their business out, maybe in eyes that are easy as like a cold to hot marketing mechanism?
Absolutely. It's still to this day an authority piece. And let's face it, when somebody has a book in their hand, it's very different than them having a business card in their hand. They're going to probably throw away your business card. Your book, they're going to keep, it's going to be on their shelf. They're going to keep getting reminded of you, whether they read it or not. It's going to be in front of them and they're going to keep remembering you. And then it's very easy to become an Amazon bestseller these days. He talked about, you know, the difference between an Amazon bestseller and a New York Times bestseller. It's fairly easy to become an Amazon bestseller. And once you get that title, which is easy to do, you call yourself a best-selling author, and that authority gets you on stages. It adds to your resume. And as a coach, I think that is super cool to have. And then yes, if you write the book the right way is what I'm trying to say, you could give them the blueprint. But if they want more, if they want coaching, accountability, and structure, that's what leads them to the course. So I share testimonials in the book. And then I say, if you want to learn more, go to ketocampacademy.com. So it's a great way to get people flowing into your programs on a continuous basis. I think it's a phenomenal idea.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you sharing that. So let's get into this. What made you write Keto Flex? So I guess, first off, who are you? What's your background? And what the hell got you into like the obsession, one could say, with keto? Because out of all the podcasts I've listened to, and I've listened to a shit ton of them, and I've read all the books, Lyle McDonald being as confusing and condescending as possible on keto, yours was very, very straightforward, to the point, and had a lot of like nuanced stuff that really do matter. So I want to kind of like start there. What made you write this book? But who are you? What got you in all this? Like, give us the story, the genesis.
Absolutely. I love the word obsession that you use. If I ask 10 people in the street, what do you think about the word obsession? They're going to 9 out of 10 will say it's probably something negative. I look at it as a beautiful positive.
It's a beautiful positive thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If it's directed towards the right thing. Right. So your obsessions become your possessions is the saying. I've been in the space now for 14 plus years. 2008 is where I was 24 years old and I followed a standard American diet growing up here in Miami. my mom worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken and Walgreens, and I would eat Kentucky Fried Chicken every night. I was obese physically, obese mentally. At the age of 24 years old is when I was really rock bottom in a dark place, ready to give up on life, looking for ways to explore that with suicide. And every time I explored that, I kept thinking about my mom and the devastation she would have to deal with if I took my life. So it stopped me. But I knew I had to figure things out. I was 250 pounds, 34% body fat. I was tired all the time, and I knew I was not going to take my life. So that's where books entered my life. A friend of mine handed me a book. The first book that I read was called The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. And the book is a great book, and it teaches you about your daily habits that they compound over time to get you your results in life. So it helped me understand that I could change things by just changing a few habits every single day. And that one book was great, but that one book led to a second book, a fifth book, a 20th book. And I fell in love with authors like Bob Proctor and Dr. Wayne Dyer and Tony Robbins and all these incredible authors. And the books did a lot for me. It opened up a whole new world. And the most important thing that it did was help me take ownership and responsibility, which is something that I never did. I was blaming my genetics, my enabling family members, my slow metabolism. But when you take ownership, all that goes away. You stop being the victim of your history and you immediately become the victor of your destiny. And that's exactly what I did. I started to move my body. I did a whole bunch of P90X back in the day because I didn't want to go to the gym. That. Yeah, you remember P90X?
Yep.
And 9 months later, I went from 34% body fat down to 6% body fat, size 38 waist to size 30.
9 months? Did you say 9 months?
Yeah, 9 months. Yeah. And I went from 250 pounds down to 170 pounds. So I got super lean and ripped. And I fell in love with fitness and nutrition, and I became a certified personal trainer, and I would travel to clients, and I put ads on Craigslist, and I had people coming to my house where I turned a bedroom into a in-home gym. I was just doing whatever it took to get some clients. Eventually that, you know, snowballed into owning a CrossFit gym in Miami for a few years. And I know that Vince has some mixed feelings about CrossFit. I do too. It really depends on the ownership, the quality of the CrossFit gym. But I had a CrossFit gym for a few years. And, you know, along the way, I wanted to explore what true cellular health felt like. Not just having six-pack abs, which is great. There's a lot of fit, sick people out there. It's not really about the abs. It's about how you feel. It's about your energy, your mental clarity. You wake up feeling refreshed. You don't need stimulants. And, you know, it led me down different paths. You know, one of those paths was a plant-based diet, believe it or not. I was a vegan for a year and a half back in 2012 and did not work for me, but.
Yeah, but that's logical. A lot of people do that on their first one. They'll go right to a plant-based diet for their first
one. Because most people think that that is the healthiest diet to this day. There's a huge agenda for it. And that was my thought process back then. But in 2013 is where I discovered keto and fasting. And it was really interesting to me because it made a lot of sense. When we think about our ancestors, we know that our ancestors all did keto, which is interesting because we think that keto is a new thing, but it is not new. It is just nuanced. It's a metabolic process, not necessarily a diet. And that's what the book is about. So I went full into keto and I did fasting with it. And I started to really experience these amazing benefits that I never experienced before. But I learned some things along the way. I was very dogmatic about a keto diet. I would say everybody needs to do keto. And I was teaching it like it was the gospel. And then soonly after that, I discovered Dr. Pompa's work, who's now my mentor, learned more about, it's not about one diet. It's about the variation. It's about metabolic flexibility. And then, you know, I've changed my mindset along the way. And that's where the book eventually started to get written. It took me about 2 years to write Keto Flex. So the premise is metabolic flexibility. We love keto. It's one tool in the shed. It's not the only tool in the shed. And we don't believe in long-term keto. We believe in the ability to flex in and out, which is the premise behind keto flexing.
So where do you think most people get it wrong with keto? I think a lot of that has to do is, you know, you'll be standing in line at Chipotle. And you'll hear comments like, oh, I'm on keto. You get as much meat, cheese, sour cream as you want. And before you know it, you're looking at someone walking out with a 5-pound plate. You know what I mean? And I'm like, well, that's not the way. But you talk a lot in that book about good fats and bad fats. So can you kind of elaborate where people get wrong with keto? And then further, why this good fat, bad fat shit really matters to people?
Yeah, it's a very important question. I think now that keto is so popular, I think because it's so popular, more people are getting harmed by keto than they are getting helped, which is surprising coming from a keto guy to say that, but that's what I see. So when I see people doing it, when I see people teaching it, they're not distinguishing between the fats. And that's your point, Jeff. It's not about just eating food because they're keto friendly. Or the question is it health friendly? Because that's not usually synonymous. It could be keto friendly, but not health friendly. So the biggest mistake people make on keto, they eat inflammatory fats, even not on keto. The biggest mistake people make with their nutrition, I believe, they eat inflammatory fats. So we know that there are different types of fats out there. They're saturated, monounsaturated, and then polyunsaturated. And they categorize these fats by their chemical structure. So for example, one of the things to consider with these fats are the amount of double bonds in these fats. So something like a polyunsaturated fat, if we look at the chemical structure, it contains a lot of these double bonds. And the significance of knowing this and understanding this is very important, because the more double bonds a fat has, the more aggressive it attracts oxygen. And the more aggressive it is attracting oxygen, the more it has the ability to oxidize. So the example I always give people is if you bit into an apple and left that apple on the counter and came back five hours later, it turns brown. There's oxidation. This is essentially what these fats are doing to our cells. It's rusting our cells. So poly, in the word polyunsaturated fats, means many, meaning many double bonds. So these are classified as vegetable oils, and they're in a whole bunch of keto products. They're at the fanciest restaurants in the world. They're at Whole Foods supermarket. And a lot of people consume them in abundance on keto to get into ketosis. Meanwhile, they're actually creating more disease and more inflammation. And I interviewed Dr. Kate Shanahan. Are you any of you familiar with Dr. Kate Shanahan at all?
Is she the one that was on your podcast that you guys talked about? Would you rather smoke cigarettes or would you rather take the inflammatory oils? She said smoking. I went, yes, I smoke pot all day long, so I am safe. Is immediately what I thought when I heard that. But yeah, let's go ahead and get into that real quick, because that is startling for people to hear that literally a doctor came out and said, better off smoking than you are eating the food that you're getting exposed to, like when you go out to
eat. And Ben, as you're going through that, if you don't mind giving examples for our listeners of what makes up, you know, a polyunsaturated acid.
Yeah, for sure. I'll do both. I'll explain why it's so bad, Jason and Jeff, and then I'll explain the eight that we want to avoid. So yeah, Dr. Kate Shanahan, she's not just any doctor, by the way. She's a medical doctor, and she was Kobe Bryant's nutritionist when he used to play for the Lakers. Wow. She got Dwight Howard off of sugar addiction. Like, she wrote a book called Deep Nutrition, which is a classic.
That's a good book.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book. Mm-hmm. And I've interviewed her a few times. She's brilliant. So to your point, Jeff, I asked her the question. I said, Dr. Kate, three scenarios. Which scenario will create more inflammation, more disease, more autoimmune, more weight loss resistance? I mean, you name the symptom. Which one is worse? Scenario number one, somebody smoking cigarettes every day, not pot, but cigarettes every day. Scenario number two, somebody's eating processed sugar every day. And scenario number three, somebody's eating these vegetable oils every day. And when I asked the question, she laughed because she thought it was such an easy question for her. She said, that is easy, Ben. It is hands down the vegetable oils. And here's her explanation. She said, cigarette smoking, obviously not good for you. However, when you finish the last puff, that smoke is not accumulating in your body fat, creating years of systemic inflammation. Damage has pretty much been done. Eating processed sugar in abundance, not good for you. But what happens when you eat some donuts? You get a big glucose spike, and then a few hours later, it drops down. The body deals with it. You could exercise. You could put on muscle. There's ways to deal with a glucose response. But these vegetable oils, they're called linoleic acid, they get stuck in your body fat, in your membrane of your cells, both mitochondria and your regular cells, for years. That it's estimated that the half-life, meaning if you remove them today, half of these fats will still be in your body fat up to 680 days later, which is insane. That's why she believes, and I agree with her, that these fats are more inflammatory than sugar and smoking. They are so unstable. So let me give your audience the list that we want to avoid. She calls them the hateful eight. So there are three C's, three S's, and then two others. Canola oil, corn oil, and cottonseed oil. Soybean oil, sunflower oil, and safflower oil. And then rice bran oil and grapeseed oil. Those are all polyunsaturated fats. We recommend swapping those for saturated fats, which have no double bonds, and then monounsaturated fats, which have one mono double bond. So those are going to be grass-fed butter, grass-fed ghee, coconut oil, olive oil, avocado oil, beef tallow. These are much stable, and they actually support the membrane and not inflame
it. Hey, Ben, where's macadamia nut oil? That's always been a favorite of mine.
So macadamia nut oil is, if it's processed, cold pressed and organic, and you're not really using it at high heat temperatures. You're using it more for like low heat or salad dressings. Totally fine.
That's how I have, you know, people use it. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
Where does fasting come into play in keto, and why would it be a benefit to actually go into keto before you go fasting? Or does it matter? Could you be fasting and then go keto? What one works better for you? Because you kind of went over different strategies in your book.
Before we cover that, could we cover like proper macronutrient percentages for keto? Because
sure, then that's a great question. Then we could dive.
I think a lot of our audience might be more into bodybuilding keto, whereas when I use it, I use more of a medical type keto, and I'm probably that's where Ben is with it too. I don't know what he calls it, but like, where are the percentages, Ben, of protein, carbs, and fat, and what you're espousing?
Yeah, so I would have answered this question differently a few years ago than I would answer it today. When you just go on Dr. Google and look up the percentages, you'll see the general recommendation would be, and this is not my recommendation, but I'm just sharing what people would see.
Right.
The general recommendation would be 85% of your calories coming from fat, about 10% from protein, and 5% carbs.
Okay.
And I think that does people a big disservice because, number one, you can get your fat calories from your food, or you could get it from your body fat. And most people that I work with need to get it from their body fat. So the way that I teach it is, in the first couple of weeks, as we get you fat adapted, we get you burning fat instead of sugar. Most people need to do that. We do focus on an abundance of fat. And I don't have them hit a percentage. I have them hit something called the 2-2-2-2 rule. And that's actually Dr. Pompa. He developed it. So it's just getting a whole bunch of tablespoons of fat per day to get enough fat to show your innate intelligence. Let's start utilizing this for fuel. And then the one we focus on at the beginning is carbohydrates. We want to look at the total carbs you're consuming and gradually decrease that to below, for most people, 50 grams of carbs for the day coming from non-starchy carbohydrates, green leafy vegetables. And if you've done that in about 7 to 14 days, you should be in ketosis. You should be burning fat instead of sugar. And we could verify that by testing your blood glucose and ketones. Once we've tested that and we see your fat adapted, then we actually, what I teach is emphasizing protein. And both of you are going to love this because I know both of you teach, you know, protein is very important. We actually teach getting 1 gram of protein per pound of your ideal body weight. So I'm not working with really bodybuilders. So let's say it's a woman named Rebecca and she weighs 180 pounds, but she wants to get to 130 pounds. I would have her consume 130 grams of animal-based protein per day. Okay. Don't even worry about the fat. Just get the fat that comes with the protein and continuously keep your carbs under 50 grams and you're going to be in a good position.
So if I can reiterate, protein is low at first, I assume, to prevent gluconeogenesis. And then once people are in, you favor extra protein, I assume, to save muscle so that you're metabolically active. And then fats come down a little bit, it sounds like, kind of whatever in the meat and the animal sources. And then they're good to go in that direction. Did I kind of summarize that correctly?
You nailed it. That's exactly what we do. Yeah.
Cool. I wanted that before we get into the fasting and things like that, because I think that tells the tale of how we're walking into this.
I also want to back up and I want to ask this question. How do you use the glucose to ketone index? And secondly, why do some people not get into ketosis? I've seen it where people, you'll put them into ketosis, you'll watch it, nothing happens, pull them out and then put them back in, and then suddenly they're in ketosis. What are some of that phenomenon to that?
Yeah, I'll address the latter, and then I'll address the testing, the GKI index. There's a few reasons why somebody might have trouble getting into ketosis. They could be severely insulin resistant or type 2 diabetic, where their body just is not familiar with burning fat. And let me just explain for the audience what ketogenesis is, which is the birth of ketones. When you drop your insulin levels low enough, the body switches fuel sources. You kind of unlock the door to your fat cells, which most people need to do. The majority of Americans need to do. And when you start burning fat, your body fat, as an energy source, those fatty acids are then shuttled to your to your liver, and then your liver produces ketones. And your liver produces three ketone bodies. There's acetoacetate, acetone, and then beta-hydroxybutyrate. And there's three ways to test those ketones because of the three different types. So acetone is tested with breath ketone meters because it's expelled in the breath. So a breath ketone meter would measure that. Acetoacetate is the most commonly tested one because it's urine strips, but I'm here to say that those are not going to be the best way to test ketones because your body when it becomes efficient at using ketones, it's not going to spill out in the urine. So it'll give you a false reading. So I don't recommend those, but they're cheap. That's why most people do it. The gold standard is beta hydroxybutyrate. It's the only ketone body that actually has the ability to cross the blood-brain barrier. And you test that with blood finger prick. If you're 0.5 or higher, like on a Keto Mojo, which is what I use, use the same thing. Yeah. You're in ketosis. Now, what happens if you're doing this for 2 weeks, you're doing this for 3 weeks, and you're not registering ketones? You could do a few things. Like you said, Jeff, I love the idea of, okay, let's mix things up. Let's get the body adapting. Let's get your carbs back up and then back down. And then all of a sudden it's just a change up. Like you change up the workout routine, the body adapts. That could be the magic trick. You could also force your carbs even lower. So if 50 grams per day of carbs is not low enough for you to enter ketosis, we might want to be more aggressive and drop that below 20 grams until your body starts pumping out those ketones or burning fat and then pumping out those ketones.
And you're meeting total there, right? Not net.
Total. Yeah, not net. You know, I used to talk about net, but keep things transparent. Total carbs.
I agree. Total carbs. I think people will be like, oh, I got my net carbs 50. I'm like, yeah, but your total carbs 120. Correct. You know what I mean? You'll see some.
Meanwhile,
crazy...
they're bloated because of all the fiber they're getting.
Yeah. 100%. Okay, cool. All right. Thanks. Continue on with what you're saying. I wanted to reiterate that to the audience because that's one thing I tell everybody. I'm like, it's the total number. It's not the net. The total matters. 100%.
Yeah. And if you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I was talking about net and now it's all about total. It keeps things transparent. So a few supplements you can take. Actually, there's some interesting research on, it's funny that you asked the question now that I'm thinking about it, because tomorrow I'm doing a YouTube live on how do you, you know, what are some biohacking ways to enhance ketones? So it's fresh on my mind. Caffeine. There's a study that shows caffeine stimulates this fatty acid production. So you could have about 2 cups of coffee in the morning or tea, whatever has caffeine. That could bump up ketones. And then there's some research that the MCT fat C8, which is caprylic acid, is the most researched when it comes to enhancing ketone production. So maybe you throw in a tablespoon of a C8 powder, C8 liquid MCT oil in your coffee. That should get ketones up. There's also some research on L-carnitine that in supplementation, maybe 500 milligrams 3 times a day, acts like a bus to shuttle fat to your mitochondria in your liver to enhance ketone production. And if you're doing all of that and you're still not in ketosis, I would revisit the fundamentals. Your sleep is probably not good because when your sleep is not optimized, you're going to have higher glucose and cortisol the next morning and ketones are going to stay low. So make sure you're getting quality deep sleep and that'll bump some things up. And then fasting, which is the next question will come into play, is also a great way to get ketones up as well. But in terms of like things you can do in the beginning, take those supplements, focus on sleep, and if you could flex out and flex back in like you talked about, Jeff, and then retest.
That's really good. Thank you for offering that exercise because people will be like, throw out the baby with the bathwater. I'm like, whoa. If you haven't done like a real keto diet in like 18 years your whole life or whatever, what makes you think you're going to get it on the first crack through? You know, and you got people who do that all the time with health nutrition. I'm sure because I've listened to your podcast enough. I've heard the questions you get asked. In the sense of like, you know, hey, 20 years ago, I did this. How's the fastest way to get it back in 3 months? And you're like, hey, well, you know, and that's why I appreciate about you because you shoot them straight. Let's get into the road of fasting. Unless you feel like there's anything else, gentlemen, that we want to clear up. I want to talk about why fasting works really well paired with keto. And do you really want to do keto before you fast, or would you want to fast before you do keto? Or what are your thoughts to that, Ben?
Well, the cool thing about fasting is that it plugs into any dietary philosophy you follow. It could be a vegan diet, it could be a paleo diet or a keto diet or a carnivore diet. So you could start with fasting whenever you want. However, if you really want to optimize your results and feel great, I would get fat adapted first because here's what I've seen. And I've taken thousands of students through these different protocols. So I learned from them. They've been my guinea pig, so thankful for them.
We're the same. We get it.
Yeah, exactly. I'll get that, right? It's like, okay, let's try this. Oh, cool. That worked. Now let's try it.
We get it.
Yeah. So I have come to find that when you go into fasting as a sugar burner, meaning you're not burning fat, your body is so used to running on glucose, sugar, and you're, let's say, 12 or 14 or 16 hours into a fast, glucose will drop in the brain and the brain will freak out. It'll send the body intense signals for sugar, for carbs to get the glucose up back in the brain. And you might have the best willpower in the world. And let's say you just fight through that. Well, then your body, your innate intelligence is so smart since you can't burn fat yet, it's going to break down protein, create glucose, and then you're going to lose hard-earned protein. Not good. So you can do it. I don't recommend just going into fasting first. I recommend getting fat adapted, because here's what happens. Then glucose drops low in the brain, but the ketones are here to give the brain a different fuel source. And now you're not breaking down protein, you're not breaking down muscle, you're actually running on ketones and you feel good. You don't have the cravings and you could fast as much as you want. You have more metabolic flexibility. So I do recommend keto first, 14 days, 28 days, depending on when you're testing how long you're in ketosis. But then you pair it with fasting and it's a great 1-2 punch.
Beautiful. When you recommend, okay, Jay, I want to talk to you, get your take on this. With the fasting, what are some windows that you do for fasting? What are you doing as far as keto and stuff like that? And then Ben, I wanted to talk to you about like the water fasting, like the 5-day water fast and things like that. And so Jay, let's start there and then we'll kind of kick it around.
Well, I kind of walk most of my clients in. So, you know, if I'm flushing them and they come out and I'll have like a low carb, 2 low carb days, maybe 2 high carb days. And then, you know, that high carb day will drop out. Then the low carb day becomes their main day. And then their off days become keto days. And then that 150 drops out. Now they're on keto days. And then as I start to feel better and I get good readings, then I bring in like fast mimicking days is what I do. And I also have IF windows. So I'll do maybe like after they're feeling better in ketosis, I'll have them do like 16 hour windows as well. Cause I'm trying to push autophagy in 18, even if they can do it. So that's kind of how I do it in a nutshell. And it just seems to work pretty well. So I have 16 to 18 windows for IF, and then I'll do a 24 hour if I need to. I do dinner to dinner. It seems to be the best. I don't know how Ben recommends, but that seems to be the best way to do it. But that's for me pretty far down the line. When I'm working an autophagy program, I'm really making sure, like Ben said, that they're already in ketosis. So before I start any of that.
Yeah, I love the variation, Jason. It's just constant mixing things up. The body's not getting familiar with the routine. So it could, it has to adapt and adapt and adapt. And that's the name of the game, like adapt or die. And when you force this adaptation, it forces hormone optimization. It forces your mitochondria to get stronger. The good mitochondria get stronger. The bad don't adapt. It dies off. So I love the variation in your approach.
Thanks. Ben, I'm curious, and Jeff might have had a question and he can back me up. When do you bring in like a carb feast day? Like eventually? I know once people get adapted pretty well, you know, I'll have maybe 3 or 4 keto days, 2 FMD days, maybe 1 24-hour water fast. And I'll have one day where they get 220 carbs. So it's complete variety and just confusion of the body as I'm trying to get rid of senescent cells and different things. Do you bring carbs back or do you kind of just let it roll? And when do you do it? I mean, are you doing it a month? Are you making sure they're just in ketosis? When do you bring carbs in and give them a little feast day?
Yeah, it's a good question. So it'll depend on the person in front of me. If they have severe insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes, they're probably going to start what I call flexing higher carb days later than somebody who's fairly healthy. So on average, like the way that I have it built out in my academy is 8 to 12 weeks until we start doing that approach where we start flexing out, where we do have intentional carb days per week. And that will look different for a man versus a woman, and a woman who has a menstrual cycle versus a woman who's postmenopausal. There's a difference between being fat adapted and being keto adapted. And I think a lot of people who do keto do it just to get fat adapted, and they flex too soon. They get out too soon without getting the amazing benefits of the keto adaptation. So I think it's important to kind of distinguish both for your audience here. Fat adaptation could be done in about 14, 21 days. And you could verify that by checking ketones and being in ketosis for a few days and you're burning fat instead of sugar, which is the goal in the beginning. Keto adaptation is a different process. It's like a physiological shift where now the mitochondria are really efficient at using those ketones. Okay. And the interesting thing about what happens here is that's you know, the way people feel is usually the gauge on whether or not they're keto adapted. And unfortunately, you can't really test for this, but I always ask people, and here's what I hear, like, oh my gosh, my mental clarity all of a sudden is just like, I feel like it's a superpower. I've broken through this weight loss resistance. Like they just tell me all these benefits are coming. And that's because when you're keto adapted, especially in the brain, which is loaded mostly with mitochondria, you get this incredible benefit. So that's why I built it out 8 to 12 weeks and then we start flexing.
Okay.
But if somebody is type 2 diabetic and they want to start flexing, I'll have them do it differently. I'll have them do it with just a high caloric day, a high protein day, not necessarily a high carb day.
Okay. All right. So I'm learning new stuff. So you've sold me. I need to get the book. These are things that I think would help me with the type of weight loss resistance people I'm dealing with. I think I'm flexing a little too early, potentially. And so that's good to know. So I have a question about myself for later in the program, but I think we're on a good path right now. I'll turn it over to Jeff.
No, I was actually going to say his book really helped me out a lot of that stuff, because that's how I started tinkering out when to do those carb days myself. And I found that about 2 days is about right of the carb days before people will kind of like start stalling back out, and then you almost have to like rinse and repeat. It just kind of depends, but sometimes people do better with just 1 day. It depends, but I think women are better with one, men are two. I do have a
That's
question
all I've been
about.
doing.
Yeah, I do have a question for you, Ben, about training. I want to ask about this. How efficient is ketogenic dieting for building muscle? We've talked about the benefits of healing the body. We've talked about the benefits of burning fat. But if you are training to build muscle, or you're trying to improve your performance, athletic endeavors, things like that, how beneficial is a ketogenic diet?
Yeah, and a great question. I was gonna, and this relates to what you were saying, just sharing, Jason. And the type of people that I work with are probably different than the type of people you work with. So I'm not opposed to your approach. I think it's brilliant. Arguably, if you have more muscle, you're more metabolically flexible, you're more athletic, you could start probably flexing and carb cycling earlier than the average person that I'm working with, which is
Got
somebody
it.
who's like obese.
Okay.
So I do
True.
love,
That is true.
yeah, the more muscle you have, the more wiggle room, and the more like it's like a sponge for glucose. So, what you're doing is fantastic. Muscle building, ketones, there's a lot of research showing that ketones are muscle sparing. And when you combine it with fasting, we know that fasting raises human growth hormone. So when you're in a fasted state, you're going to lower insulin, which is very important for fat loss and for a lot of people who have insulin resistance. As you lower insulin during a fast combined with keto, you have these other hormones that go up. They're called counter-regulatory hormones. So glucagon, human growth hormone, cortisol, noradrenaline. But human growth hormone is one of them, which is muscle preserving and muscle building. So a lot of people think I cannot do fasting or keto because I want to build muscle, but actually it could help you, unless you do too much. Of course, there needs to be a balance. So
Right.
it could definitely work. I've interviewed a gentleman named Robert Sykes, who's a bodybuilder, a natural ketogenic bodybuilder who wins awards, and he's a strict, he doesn't even flex. We don't agree on that. I think he should flex, but he doesn't even go get out of ketosis, and the guy's ripped. And there's a lot of research out there showing that ketones could be muscle sparing. But when you look at some studies that show the opposite, because there's going to be counter arguments, I get them all the time. Keto is going to cause you to lose muscle, or your performance is going to decline. The studies are right, but here's what the study don't do right. That's looking at the short-term effect. That person is not keto adapted yet. They're not looking at these individuals long enough for the body to make that shift, and then you get the gain. So maybe in the beginning, as an athlete, you might see a decline in your performance and strength, but if you stick with it and you get that keto adaptation, you're going to benefit more long term. So don't just look at the short term sacrifice. Look at the long term gain, and that's where the studies show the benefits come.
You know, I can speak a little bit here. I ran a keto for about 3 months, probably in, I don't know, 2019, and I'm
I
sure I was
remember
keto
that,
adapted.
dude.
Remember that? And
Man.
I mean, my training was great. Like I was able to work. I was fine. Like I felt great. When I came off of that, I slowly added carbs in. I've never been leaner. I've never been bigger at that weight than I ever was. It was almost like that time. Factory reset my body. I was insulin sensitive as hell. It was probably the funnest time in my bodybuilding career. And I mean, I looked about 4 weeks out for like probably a year. It finally
Wow.
faded. I really need to repeat it, but I haven't gone and done it yet. But I don't know if I gained during, but I was able to train very well. And coming off of it was like a freaking slingshot. And then I gained probably some of my best gains. So I think as a tool in
Great.
that way, it worked amazing. One other thing I would say, I think I could gain on keto as long as I was in a surplus. I mean, if I'm in a surplus of calories and have plenty of fats and calories, I can train really hard on keto and it doesn't really affect me in that. And where people think, oh, I'm going to be weaker. I'm just like, I can get a pump. I add a little extra salt. I go. So I think if you're in a surplus, I think you could gain on it. Are you going to gain as quickly with carbs? Maybe not. But when you come off of it, that slingshot effect is really wild. So people who can execute that, I think, could really, really benefit from it.
Well, you also Lyle talks about this in his book, targeted ketogenic dieting, where people take carbs just right before their workout, mm-hmm. and then they'll be able to stay in ketosis if they're so deep. They won't have issues. But yeah, go ahead and answer that question real quick, Ben. I want to ask you a couple of weird questions before we get into
the weird questions.
Yeah.
You know, just to piggyback off of what you just both said, you could time those carbohydrates around a workout where you're just going to burn it up. You're just going to use it as an energy source. So you're still in ketosis. And, you know, for me personally, I'm so metabolically flexible. I don't really have, like, for my schedule, I don't say like, okay, Friday is going to be a keto flex day, a high carb day. You know, some days I'm in ketosis. Some days I'm doing longer fast because I have a busy day. But sometimes I'll just have like a 4 p.m. meal where I have a whole bunch of carbs and I get kicked out of ketosis. And then in the morning, I'm right back in. It's like, that could be another form. I know Ben Greenfield does that. Like he'll be in ketosis throughout the day. And then we'll have most of his carbs around later afternoon, get himself out of ketosis, and then back in the morning. So he does this keto flex approach like every single day. So there's different ways to do it. The more metabolically flexible and active you are, the more strategies you can implement that work really well. But Jason, you said something also important with the salt. That is very important. Like as you lower insulin and the more keto you do, the more fasting you do, you're going to lower insulin. You're going to release more water weight, which is great. You're going to look lighter, less puffy, less bloated. It's going to feel fantastic. But with that, the kidneys go through this diuresis sort of process where it also releases all these electrolytes. So the keto flu, for example, is a result of this excessive loss of electrolytes. So in the beginning, it's very important to get it as 2 teaspoons of sea salt every day, which is a part of that 2-2-2-2 rule I spoke about. But even if you're not doing it in the beginning and you're very active in doing keto and fasting and you're training a lot, you got to be really intentional with replenishing those electrolytes, because then the adrenals are going to have to just pump out cortisol and it'll be problematic and you actually could deplete your minerals and create problems. So I love that you mentioned the sea salt part. You got to be very intentional with that.
Yeah, I've got a whole process I do if I'm on keto that I do pre-workout that helps me get a pump, whether it's a fake pump or not. I don't care. It still works. It might be a good question for me to ask right now myself. When I go into ketosis, Ben, most people have a period where they feel like shit. I never really do. Is that because my metabolism is so fast? I clear out the carbs so fast. I mean, I never get keto. I don't even know what keto flu is. Mm-hmm. My workouts never suffer. It's like within 24 hours, I feel great. Is that even possible with some people?
That's the ultimate goal right there, Jason. You're metabolically flexible. Like that is the ultimate goal, to be metabolically flexible. I'm the same way. I could go on vacation and have 7 high carb days in a row, and then I'm back home, and then I'm right, and then I'm going into a 24-hour fast, and right back into ketosis. I feel good. That is the ultimate goal. That's what I teach people, to be metabolically flexible, to not be dogmatic about keto. It's just one tool to achieve this metabolic flexibility, which I believe is the ultimate key to longevity. People talk about anti-aging and biohacking devices and supplements, and I'm all for that, but it starts with being metabolically flexible. So that's what you are, Jason.
Okay. Because I mean, I run keto a lot of times on my off days and I feel freaking amazing. And people are always like, and I'll do it 2 days in a row. And they're like, don't you feel bad on the second day because you're already eating carbs? And I'm like, no, I feel great. I love it. And so I was just like, am I a freak? Am I weird? Like, so that makes sense. I get it.
Okay. You are the exception, because most people can't do that. But that goal is to get most people to do that. And it's definitely a good thing. You've built up that metabolic machinery, and it's hats off to the work you put into it.
Got it. Cool. All right. Back to you, Jeff.
I have a question, and this is going to maybe, I did keto not long ago, and I agree with Jason. It's a big factory set. I was doing mine more on the enhanced side. I was curious if you've seen this, because you do deal with gym pop people. When I was taking metformin and I was using berberine, I could dip into ketosis faster. Now, I will say that there was, like, if I did a carb refeed on a Saturday, I would get up that morning, do 2 IUs of Humalog, fast to cardio, and it would drive my insulin down and everything. But I was doing metformin a lot. I upped my metformin to like 2,000 milligrams, and I noticed my insulin level, my BG was 60 to 65, and my ketones were flying off the charts, like all over the place. Have you implemented those strategies? And I can tell you that I found that metformin at 1500 milligrams was the most powerful, even at berberine at 4,000 milligrams in comparison, because I tried both to see. So I was curious if you use any of those tricks with people to kind of help them drive into ketosis a little bit more.
Well, a question on the berberine. When you were taking it that high dose, did you get any stomach distress?
I was going to ask the same thing, Ben.
I used to, and that was probably because I had a fungal thing, but now I have no issues. I could take up 3 grams of that stuff, 4 grams, and not even fart in the wind the wrong way.
So I don't use metformin or recommend it to my students, but I do use berberine. I use a form of berberine called dihydroberberine, which is the active version of berberine. And it means your stomach doesn't have to convert it to the active form. It's already converted for you. And I love it. I've done some experiments personally where I put on a continuous glucose monitor, all for the sake of science. And I've gone to like an organic gelato place. And I'm like, all right, let's test this one day without berberine, dihydroberberine. Let's test it one day with it and see the response. And it really works well for like a high carb day. If you're going to feast it up, sometimes I'll do that. Or with students who have insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes, it's a great substitute for metformin or insulin or other blood sugar reducing meds. I like berberine better than that. Because what they both do, what berberine does, as well as metformin, it activates AMPK, which then shuttles the glucose from the meal back to your liver and muscle glycogen. So it's kind of storing it away versus packing it into your body fat for stored energy. So you get a little bit more of a better postprandial glucose response, which is that glucose response after a meal. I don't recommend it as a long-term continuous use. I recommend it as like a biohack to use it cyclically. So berberine I'm down with, but metformin I haven't really utilized.
All right, well, fair. I figured I'd ask. I mean, I was telling Jason all stuff. I also noticed that if I took a shot of growth hormone first thing in the morning, fasted, and didn't do it with metformin, it knocked me right out of ketosis, and it would take me time for that GH to put back in. But if I did the GH with Humalog or metformin, I did not have any loss of ketosis. It was very interesting how that played out. So just weird stuff. I have one more question, and this one's going to be more about sleep and recovery. So you hammer home sleep and you're like, hey, shit falls apart, it's sleep. If your results suck, and we were like that too. Usually sleep is the crux of everything. But why do people, when they go on keto diet, start noticing their resting heart rate goes up, start noticing their HRV goes down, their sleep actually gets worse? What are these things that's causing that with the ketogenic diet? Because sometimes when you put people in that first week or two, some of them, it's like rough. And if I'm not sleeping but 4 hours a night, I sure as shit wouldn't want to do it. So what causes that? What background do you have on that to help people with that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, these questions are fantastic. I love the conversation. So kudos to both of you. Yeah, I love it. It happens because a couple of reasons. Number one, here's something that's controversial in the keto space. Keto is a stress to your body. Okay. And not all stress is bad. Stress is actually vital for longevity and health, as long as your body adapts to it. Back in the day, the reason every single one of our ancestors did keto is because they all went through a famine. They didn't have food available to them. And sometimes when they did, it was mostly protein and fat, not always carbs, especially in the winter. So it signals to the innate intelligence, you're going through a stressful time. You're going through a famine. And it is a positive stress when your body adapts to it. So it is a stress. So that's why you see the HRV lower with the heart rate variability, because it is becoming, it's a change, which is a stress in itself. But then ketosis is also it's stressing your mitochondria. But that's actually a good thing, because short term, not long term. Because when it stresses your mitochondria, it forces the mitochondria to adapt, back to Jason's point with all the changes he does for his clients. And when you stress the mitochondria, it tells them to actually reproduce. It goes through mitogenesis. Mm-hmm. So when we study the electron transport chain, and we look at how energy is created by our cells, and we look at glucose, sugar, versus fat ketones, we see that when a cell and the mitochondria are using ketones, there's 400% more ATP being generated versus glucose. There's about 32 to 36 ATP molecules from glucose and over 130 from ketones. And that is because of the creation of new mitochondria from the stress. Mm. And that's why people have more energy. And this goes back to your point with the resting heart rate, because as you create more energy, it raises your basal metabolic rate, which helps you burn more fat, but it also raises your resting heart rate. So you're seeing all these changes, and then your body will adapt to that eventually. But here's the thing. when you stick with ketosis too long, all of a sudden you're getting all those benefits. It's this hormetic curve with the stress, and then you don't adapt. So you do a workout in the gym and then you recover and adapt, you get stronger, right? But if you keep working out and you do 5 hours a day and you're not sleeping, all of a sudden the results go down, similar to with long-term ketosis and too much fasting. So to answer your question, the reason is because you're raising your basal metabolic rate. It's a stress to your body, which challenges your nervous system, which drops your HRV. And there's some things you could do with that, right? I always tell my clients in the beginning, if your sleep is, you're not getting good sleep in the beginning, have a little bit of some coconut oil before bed, or even sometimes like a small amount of raw sugar, raw honey before bed to give your glucose some sugar. And then your body adapts eventually. So there's things you can do to overcome that.
Ben, is there any truth to serotonin being lower on ketosis?
I don't know. Okay. I haven't seen anything about that. Okay. And are you saying long-term ketosis or in the beginning?
Lower production of the serotonin due to less carbohydrates.
I don't know. I haven't seen anything. It's a great question. I would venture to guess that probably with long-term ketosis, you would see that, but I'm not so sure. I haven't seen anything with short-term.
Okay.
I would comment on that, but I microdosed through LSD throughout my keto thing. So
you were spiking.
I couldn't tell. Yeah. I'm a big fan of that. I've been doing that since 2017. I talk about that a lot in my book. Jason,
you're ahead of the game, my friend.
Yeah, man. No, trust me. Jason members, I got called a witch and all sorts of shit on social media. Yeah. People left my gym. And then here we are, 2023, and motherfucker Jeff Black's liberated. And I look like a genius for doing it when everybody else was crazy. We presented with coaches who thought, used to make fun of me, who now they're all like touting the benefits. I'm like, I see you, fucker. You know? So, Jay, do you have any questions you want to round this out with? Because I want to ask Ben like a final one. And then, you know, audience, if you are listening, we probably did this as high level as we could, but I know there's probably another high level. So any questions you have, we'll flirt with Ben. We'll persuade him to come back on. But Jay, what's your question that you have to round out before I close?
Okay. So I am going to read the book 100%. I need to, but I have a question for you, Ben, for right now. Do you use any fast mimicking days to get into ketosis?
It's a tool in the shed. I don't use it often, but I like it as a tool. We've done some work with, Dr. Longo and the their program, what is it called, Prolon now?
So
I've done it myself a few years ago, and here are my thoughts on the Prolon, the fast. And are you referring to their program or a different variation of fast?
I basically got it from Longo, and I was doing, like, with my clients, I do like 600 calories, 300 from veggies and 300 from fats, no direct protein, and I might give them one or two of those a week, never back to back, and just mix it in with the keto as we move further along.
I think it's a great tool for somebody who's going from a standard American diet who wants to transition to more of like a low carb, high fat ketogenic approach. When I first did the Prolon 5-day fast, and I did it with the boxes, I didn't do the way you did it, and I love that you're doing it, your custom version.
Yep.
I felt like I was personally taking a step back because I've done already a 5-day water fast, which I know, Jeff, you wanted to talk about. And I was checking my glucose and ketones, and I didn't see close to the numbers like that I wanted to see versus a regular water fast. So for somebody like me and somebody like you, Jason and Jeff, that's metabolically flexible, I think it's a step back. For somebody who's a standard American diet who wants to get into this lifestyle, I think it's a great tool.
Got it. Okay. And, you know, I am dealing with a lot of 40 and 50 year old women with, you know, severe weight loss resistance. Yeah. They've lived a healthy lifestyle, but they're not obviously as metabolically flexible as any of us sitting here. So I do use it as a tool. And I was just curious your take on it. And I appreciate that.
Well, I like your approach actually better than the Prolon, because the Prolon has a lot of inulin in it, which actually flares up especially if somebody has SIBO, it creates more bloating and diarrhea. So just having them eat more fat and I think you said vegetables.
Yep.
It's a variation that doesn't have to deal with all that inulin in the products.
100%.
Bloaties would be a great supplement too, Jason, that you sell. Yep. I use that heavily through my keto diet. That was good for selling my gut. Ben, I'm going to ditch the water fasting so I can like flirt with you later to bring you back onto the podcast. Cause I think like that could be like a whole, because you know, there's levels to this. And I think we covered a good base layer for the playbook today. But my last question to you is this: what is one thing you would like people to remember and know about keto that will benefit them? And what is one thing you'd like them forget about ketogenic dieting that does not serve them, that makes them confused and possibly harms their results long-term?
Yeah. Okay. Good question. Can I answer it with health and not keto?
You can answer it however you want to answer. It's yours to answer.
Okay. So with health, I would say what I want them to forget, this might be, I don't know where you both stand with this. So this might be something where we disagree.
We like controversy.
Yeah. I would tell them to forget about focusing on calorie counting.
Oh, we agree.
I would tell them, okay. I would tell them that, look, their calories matter, but they're far down on the priority list. It's all about hormones and the response from those calories. So forget about just focusing on calories and focus on your hormones instead would be the latter question, part of your question. The one thing that I want everyone to get, like when I'm gone and people are reading my work and watching my videos in the future, they're going to learn about keto and fasting, all the things I speak about. But the number one thing that I want to get across to the world is to believe that your body was built to heal itself. And God created your body to be self-healing. There's an innate intelligence that's the world's greatest physician. Stop blocking it. Like, believe that you could heal. Don't fall into the nocebo effect that the world has given you, your doctor has given you, that you're broken and you need this medication, you need this drug, you need this surgery to heal your body. Everything you need is inside. Just remove the interference. We've been brainwashed to believe that symptoms are evil and a diagnosis is evil and we should hate it and mask it. But symptoms are a beautiful gift from your innate intelligence showing you that your body is out of homeostasis. It's your check engine light. Let's view it as such and then believe your body can heal itself. Adopt that belief, because whatever you put energy into expands. That's a universal law. So put energy into your body being able to heal itself. And that's the number one thing I would get across to the world.
That was... I love that.
No, that was a hell of a close.
Sound bites from the program. That was
awesome. Yeah, no, man, that was a hell of a close. And that's why I wanted to ask that question, because your book, you know, I know Jay's going to get it. I devoured it. I actually read it twice. I've recommended it to clients.
Thank you so much.
But I knew you'd be well versed to be able to close that out the right way. Now, I do have a question for you, audience. So pay attention. This is very, very important. You do not want to buy this book off Amazon unless Ben says so, because it fucks the author. So, Ben, where can people buy your book? Where can people follow your podcast? Where can people sign up for some of your educational stuff? I know I have floated you. We do a physique education collective. It's not the size of the event that you've been to before. We do about 50 people, very quaint at my gym. One day, I love to talk about bringing you onto the panel here to Nashville, because you actually can talk and you don't need a monitor there to read it while you're spitting it. And that was super impressive of me to see why you're doing it.
Oh, thank you, man. I would be honored to do that, by the way. I love Nashville too.
We'll have a good time.
We have a hell of a time.
Yeah, we have a good time. Yeah. But where can everybody buy your book? Where can everybody find you, follow you, show you love and all that?
Thank you for asking. I really appreciate the support too. It means a lot. Thank you for that. In this case, I self-published the book, so it is on Amazon. But you are right, though. Most of the time, it's like you want to go to the author's website.
Yep. Yeah.
So if you go to ketoflexbook.com, it goes to the Amazon page, and it's available on paperback. It's available on Kindle, and it's available on Audible. I narrated
It's on Kindle. That's how I get it.
Kindle and Audible too, if you're more of an audio person. Okay. Look, have you, any of you narrated your books before?
So
I don't have one yet, Jeff.
I'm set to narrate mine starting the end of this year. Cause what they told me was you release the book and then you start recording the Audible. So that way you can release the Audible a year later from the books. That way it gets a second wind.
Yeah. So that's a strategy for sure.
Right.
I did it that way accidentally because I came to find that it was a pain in the ass to narrate my book. Oh my gosh. So I say that because I have so much respect for authors who read their own book. So I respect you for doing that. It is so worth it at the end of the day, but it was a pain in the ass. So for those who like that the author reads the book, my book is narrated by me. I have a lot of fun on it. It took a long time. So that's why I actually released it like 10 months after the paperback release, not strategically, because it took me that long to finally get it done. So yeah, it's available. KetoFlexBook.com has all of those options.
Absolutely, man. Well, dude, thank you so much for your time today. This was such a fantastic chat and one we desperately needed to have. And
get a lot of listens.
To branch somewhere new with someone who knows different things than we do and help us put together other pieces that we try to do for coaches, man. So we really appreciate you. Very awesome. Well, guys, take care and have yourself a beautiful day.
See ya.
Bye, guys. Peace.